Welcome to my kitchen, and today I'm going to talk a bit about drink, and if I have time I'll talk a bit about food. But let me tell you about the Cerritini, a cocktail made by the great Mark Cotton, MC Fontaine on social networks. You get a load of good vodka, you get half a load of good gin, and you get a load of good vermouth, and you get yourself a bottle of cherries, cocktail cherries, and you crush them up and you make the juice, or you make juice from them, and you add that, you shake the darn thing forever, and you then pour it out and you serve it. Oh, I presume all those ingredients have to be cold. And that is a terrific cocktail. Now, let me tell you about my favourite cocktail. Well, I was standing in a Parisian cafe, stroke restaurant, stroke bistro, on the day that I proposed to my wife. The proposal didn't come until after this. And I saw a guy take a bottle of stuff and lift it above his head and pour it in a long stream, a bit like a man might do if he was going to the toilet, a long stream down into the cocktail shaker. I saw him shake it, and then I saw him pour all the stuff out of it down the sink. Then I saw him take a bottle of something else and pour that in on top of the ice, which was coated in the other stuff, and I saw him shake that, and I saw him pour it out into a cocktail glass. And then I think I saw him, but I can't be sure, add an olive to it. And that, as you probably guessed, or as you may have guessed, is my favourite drink, and it's called a dry martini. And the first thing is vermouth, the second thing is gin. And I'm not much fussed, to be truthful, about whether you add an olive to it or not. That is rocket fuel for my evening. That doesn't make me go to sleep. That keeps me alert. And it's by far my favourite drink of all. Even more favourite than drinking a pint of Guinness. Now, let me take you to my food cupboard then. I want to just tell you about a few things that I keep in here. I have a spray, an object for spraying balsamic vinegar onto things. You just simply push down on it. I have goodness knows how many types of salt I have here. I have two other bottles of balsamic vinegar. I have a bottle of cider vinegar. I have a rice wine vinegar. I have sweet red pepper sauce by Bungalung Organic. I have, although I don't use this, tahini, a glass bottle of tahini, sesame seed puree. And I don't use this one either, apricot jam. I have that there. Then I have more original pasta sauce from, own brand from Super Value. I have tomato and vegetable sauce by Bungalung. I have pita bread for some weird reason. And now I get to the thing I really want to tell you about. I have a packet of Vindaloo ready-to-cook sauce mix from a company called Param Para. And I have been told this can be added to lamb, chicken, water. You add lamb, chicken, water and vinegar. But I've been told that this is a great company. Now, the great company that I know is Green Saffron. They make the most wonderful, they package the most wonderful Indian spices. They fly them over. Here, I have one here, which is, this will give you an idea. This is their Mesmerizing Madras, a Tamil Nadu-style dish full of the beauty of the southern Indian state, a sultry and sensuous blend of star anise, black cardamom, I've never seen white cardamom, black cardamom and turmeric, ready to mix with coconut milk and send your taste buds waltzing. That I love. What else do I have here? I have peanut butter, I don't use that either. I have Dijon mustard. The original Dijon mustard, I definitely use that. What else have I got inside here? Liquid Aminos, all-purpose seasoning, natural soy sauce alternative. Why? I don't know why that's there. Oh, some dreadful distilled malt vinegar. I don't know why I have that. And here I have a packet of green saffron, red lentil dal, rumbustuous red lentil dal. It's we've combined black pepper and cloves with our own garam masala blend, ready to mix with red lentils. I have another one here. No, that's a full bottle of mesmerizing madras and tomato ketchup. Actually, I do have to tell you about the salt. I do really have to tell you about the salt because I bought this box in Harrods many years ago and it's called Flor de Sal, F-L-O-R-D-E-S-A-L. And I don't really know, it's from, if I remember rightly, it's Mediterranean, it's from the Balearics, but they're beautiful flavoured salts. Now, what can I go on with? That's enough now. Let me tell you, I cook. My mother let us make sweets out of sugar and almost nothing else, water, make crackling sweet stuff, make fudge as well in the kitchen at home as a child. And I've always cooked ever since then. I found that it was a great way to get on well with women, is to cook a meal for them. I also found it was a great way to have a crowd of guys in and have a great, great fun. The first really big meal I ever cooked involved me putting five rabbits into a large pot with a huge amount of cider, and I can't remember what vegetables were put into it, but that was the first big meal I ever cooked. I'm much, much better at cooking big meals. I prefer to cook for 12 people than to cook for four. In fact, my portion control is lousy. So when you actually get to cook for 12, you're limited by the size of the pot, and that's about all. One little recipe I'll give you just to finish, and it's I found this recipe in an Elizabeth David book. I think it was called Salt, Spices and Aromatics. I can't quite remember if there was any more to the book than that, but it's a dish called Welsh salt duck. Take a duck, get a good sized duck, by the way, get a good sized duck, not a frozen one, get an unfrozen duck, and then rub salt into it for 3 days. You get a load of salt and you rub it in. You can see why in a second. Then you take the duck after the third day and you rinse it under a tap. Get rid of all as much salt as you can from it. Rinse it under a tap and then put it in the oven covered in cold water. You have to completely cover it in cold water and put it in the oven. And then cook it for 2 hours. Now I'm serious, only for 2 hours at gas mark two. Gas mark two. I'm not sure how that converts into North American parlance, but it's actually a very low temperature. And you then take it out. You take it out and you rinse it again and you put it into the fridge. And I'm not sure you actually have to rinse it at this stage. I can't quite remember if I rinsed it or not. You put it into the fridge and then you eat it raw. You slice it very thinly. It's like a carpaccio, and you serve it. And now that, the salt, by the way, as you can guess, I suppose, breaks down the fibres of the meat, so there's no need to add heat or anything like that to it, and you just serve it cold. Absolutely stunning thing. By the way, I'm hopeless at baking. I'm really hopeless at baking. I've done very little baking in my life, but I accept that I've had great fun with the book. I hate stopping this audio. I really do. I just love food so much. But in case you might know it, Mastering the Art of French Cookery is for me the number one cookery book, volumes 1 and 2. I have cooked everything, I think, absolutely everything in volume 1. And I think that Julia Child and co. Have written a book there which, you know, even the most dim of us could follow. The recipe for bœuf bourguignon, for example, would stretch over about 4 pages in the book. So they do really tell you exactly how to make things. Delia Smith, of course, is the greatest from the point of view of the most reliable cookbook writer that's ever been invented. And the great treat that I had for years was possessing, and I still have it, a copy of La Russe Gastronomique. And that has so many. I went through a period of trying my hand at being a French chef and using loads and loads of cream and butter. I can't remember what else I was using, but they were the two big things. I would have been a cholesterol king at it. But La Russe Gastronomique is a big, fat, thick book. It's kind of a reference, but it's full of loads of recipes. But there are recipes for things that I've never cooked at all. It's like hares in port and things like that. What else can I tell you? Oh, yes. I do love bœuf en croûte. Beef in pastry. Absolutely fabulous. And I was once a grace maker of pâté. So I'd make my own pâté. I'd put it around the beef. I'd make my own pastry. I had to need the help of many books to be able to do that. And then I'd paint the pastry with egg yolk. So it would turn out beautifully golden, the colour pastry. And I love doing that. What else can I tell you? Finally, the last thing is, one of the best desserts I ever had. Two best desserts. One is jelly, but made with gin. So the liquid that goes into, and a good large amount of gin now. So if you take jelly and you take a tin of strawberries or raspberries, and use the juice of that. Don't bother with the fruit itself. Keep it clean and clear. And then a good, I'd be talking about 3 cupfuls of gin into it. That would be fantastic. And then the simplest dessert recipe of all is to get ice cream and to buy a thing of Maltesers and crush the Maltesers, smash the Maltesers into bits and pour the Maltesers over the top and eat that with ice cream. Absolutely yummy, yummy, yummy to die for. But one last thing to do with desserts, get pineapple, take all the skin off it. Hold on a second. Yeah, put all the skin. Take all the flesh of the pineapple out of the skin. Then you have 2 halves. You cut the pineapple. I'm getting all over myself here. You cut the pineapple down the center. You then put the pineapple pieces back into the pineapple. Pour a goodly supply of alcohol on top of it, and a goodly supply of brown sugar, and roast that in the oven. Absolutely to die for, I have to say. I'm also big into soups. I don't think I'll give you a recipe for soups because, any kind of soup. But the most elaborate thing I've done is bone chicken. That's the kind of most fiddly thing. I learned how to bone chicken, and I think boning a turkey would even be easier because there's more space to work with. I haven't actually done it. I've never eaten blackbird. Or thrush at all, and I don't think I'd, I wouldn't be in principle against eating them, but I've never tasted them, and I don't remember if I ever cooked a goose. I think I'd like the to cook a goose. To cook your goose. Yeah, what else can I say, really? I better stop. I tried to stop a few times, but the thing about food is that it's absolutely lovely. Let me take you to a great breakfast, actually. You get over here. I'm very fond of this now. You get porridge oats. You soak them in milk overnight. Plenty of milk, by the way. Plenty of milk. And at the same time, you put a small quantity of raisins into a little bowl. I mean about 30 raisins, and you pour boiling water over them, not an awful lot of boiling water. And then the following morning, you heat up the porridge, and then you pour in on top of it just before you eat it, the plump raisins with the juice of raisins. One of my favourite fruits is apricots, fresh apricots. I could eat, and I'm addicted. I kind of have an uncontrollable impulse to eat all of the grapes that are available. If allowed to do so, I have often eaten a whole pound of grapes, one after the other. The other thing that I have been excessive about are olives. I found a great book once about an American who inherited a small olive grove in the south of France, and he didn't know anything about olives. So he arrives over to France to take possession of his property there. And he then sets out to find the best traditional methods of making olive oil in the world, basically. And he travels around the whole of the Mediterranean, and I'm including the Lebanon and Israel and all around, and maybe even Syria, I can't quite remember. But certainly he covered Tunisia and Algeria, Italy, Spain, all, and he was in search of the most, you know, authentic ways. In other words, you weren't pouring hot water in on top of the olives and then crushing them. You were just crushing them by their own weight, and maybe getting two pressings out of the olives. I absolutely love olives. I probably used to eat more olives. Well, definitely used to eat more olives than I eat today. But I like them a lot. Hummus I love. There's a great place in the English market where you can get three different types of hummus. One involving hummus with coriander. That's my favourite one of all. So it's got kind of green in it. Oh, for goodness sake, Paul, stop. Let me just take you to the cookery books here that I see in front of me. I have Adelia Smith's Complete Illustrated Cookery Course. I have the Avoca. I have Ballymaloe. Ballymaloe Cookery Course. I have a great book, which I haven't read enough of. It's called An Irish Butcher Shop by Pat Whelan. This is everything you could possibly want to know about how to cook beef. Somebody gave me Nevin Maguire, the McNean restaurant cookbook. I've never looked at that. And that's about all I have to say. Fish. I absolutely adore cooking fish. And I like to cook wild fish more than I've gone completely off salmon ever since it's all farmed. But I'd be very, very partial to fish from the sea. How much time have I got left? I've only got a few more minutes. I'll tell you a funny story about the time that I did something. I my brother-in-law came to stay. There were three of us in the UK eating these, and I cooked sea bream. I love sea bream. Now, they probably were farmed, to tell you the truth, but they may not have been farmed. Anyway, the meal began, and of course there were all sorts of nice things at the beginning. I love finding things, probably. I don't know what. We probably had mozzarella with tomatoes and basil to start the meal. Anyway, a beautifully cooked sea bream put on the table. I was eating away and I looked across to my brother-in-law 1 second and I realised that I'd forgotten. I had forgotten to clean his fish. I'd served him a fish which was completely, the innards of the fish were still intact in the fish. Well, obviously he didn't eat any more of it. But that's a complete clangor that I dropped. It's like, I remember my mother dropping a clangor once. People came for afternoon tea in our house and the teapot was all there, and so were the biscuits, and maybe so were the griddle cake or whatever kind of griddle bread, whatever was made, homemade fresh bread there. And the tea was poured out, but hey presto, the tea was poured out, but no leaves had been put in the teapot. So out came hot water. Look, food is something that we all love. Some people live in order to eat, and some people eat in order to live. I think I'd be closer to the former than the latter. Yes, I am, and I'd love to, if on Audio Boom, we could have a series of audios in which people would share their favourite recipes. That would be a great one. We could actually have maybe a month-long audio communal activity only entirely devoted to food and to every single aspect of food, everything, food and drink, you know, and we could have all the wine aficionados talking about their wine in a popular way or a way that the rest of us would understand. Anyway, what about that idea? And that would be very, very nice altogether. Cheerio for now. Lots of love. Paul O'Mahony saying bye-bye for now, who are obviously in a great mood.